Okay, Cap Figure Podcast episode 11. Last week, I played some shocking undercover audio of a conversation between me and my softball coach, Dan, where he revealed his true colors. Now, he's responded, blasting off a missive audio file, bashing the Cap Figure Podcast. So I'll play that for you, but first I'll play the clip that he is mad that I showed the world.
So they vetoed that Altuve trade.
Yeah.
And they're your friends that you're betting with.
Well, no, well, that's the thing. They're not completely my friends.
So that's the clip Dan's responding to. I normally wouldn't play it on the air, but my dad always said to me, he goes, "Ryan, if you ever have a sports podcast and you play undercover audio you recorded behind your coach's back and he wants to respond the following week, you play that audio and you don't edit it and you play it uninterrupted." And so I guess with my dad's advice in mind, I mean, I think that this fits that criteria more or less. I'm going to play Dan's little rebuttal.
Yeah, this is Coach Dan. And I am responding to some things that were said about me at the top of the last Cap Figure podcast, which I listened to for some unknown and clearly idiotic reason. I must have run out of things in the world to listen to and decide that I'd, you know, give a shot to the ramshackle podcast run by the guy who I'm trying to make a more consistent hitter and better defensive player. And what do I hear but that same guy slandering me at the top of his little podcast? So I just want to set the record straight. In my fantasy league, I made a trade to Roto League 5x5. I made a trade for Jose Altuve and Mark Melanson. And in return, I gave up Jose Ramirez, Cesar Hernandez, and Jonas Cespedes, who was about to go on the DL. So the league decides they're going to veto this trade because they say it's way out of balance. And I say, look, you can't veto the trade if you also have a side bet with me, because that's, you can't be objective. That's like a blackjack dealer vetoing the ace you drew at the blackjack table. Talk about no integrity. Talk about no integrity and no friendship. But this actually goes to a larger point that you might actually want to talk about on your podcast if you're interested in making it listenable.
Oh, I am.
By having interesting content
on it for once.
Which is that a lot of these guys in these fantasy leagues, you know, they think that they're the one-man Cato projection system, and they want to run these leagues like they're 9 mainframe simulations where every single trade has to be perfectly balanced in terms of value.
Okay.
Quote, value.
That, you know what, man? That was amazing. That will make the show listenable. Tom, we got to hire this guy. Did you hear his take on fantasy commissioners who veto ridiculous trades? What a hot take. I don't care what it takes, sign him. Because that was not boring at all. And I very much appreciate being told how to make the show listenable. Wow, so Cap Figure Podcast episode 11. That was Coach Dan replying, and I was sarcastic there, but Tom and I were nodding our head about the corruption, it sounds like, going on that's pervasive in your fantasy league. You know, I run a league, Tom is involved in fantasy leagues, and as good people with good soul, you know, if the people in the league were better people, then stuff like that wouldn't go on. But if you allow it by being the type of people who would call their friends not their friends, you're setting up an environment for that to happen in. So, Dan, you're to blame yourself. Hi, Tom.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, just quickly, thought, enough about this guy.
Yeah, Dan, be the change you want to see.
So, No, but seriously, thanks for listening. Don't stop listening. Thank you. This is Cap Fear Group Podcast, episode 11. The San Diego AJ Preller. It's a team of our podcast, the San Diego Padres, because they're very funny. They're very ridiculous. And they suck. And now their GM is suspended, I find out. And I don't know details. Tom is going to fill us in. So, Tom, tell me what happened, yo.
Yeah, so to make the segue from corrupt fantasy league management to the real world of Major League Baseball, AJ Preller was suspended for 30 games by Major League Baseball for failing to properly disclose full players' medical information when negotiating trades. Now, the process that generally happens for any player's injuries, preventative treatments, basically anything relating to those players, it's input into a central database that all teams can access that's called the Athlete Health Management System.
That, let me just real quick, that's so creepy. This is the first I've heard of this 5 minutes ago when you told me this the first time. That's isn't that like, I guess if they're not with real doctors, it's like a breach, but I'm sure they sign in their contracts to agree to be part of it. You know, your body is not really yours when you get paid that many millions for your body, but still, it seems like a little weird.
Yeah, I'm sure it was something negotiated on by the Players Association, but there's probably a benefit to the players as well. For example, a player switches teams, then, you know, the health records are there for the new trainers and doctors so they can see, you know, what the old trainers were doing.
I don't think players would want it on a whole. Like, they're afraid with this new technology that like, if they have too much stuff, then they'll find out that they're no good. I don't know, whatever. I hear you, though. And also, it's like tough bleep. It's like you're getting paid millions for your body. It's like a model. It's like if the modeling agency like analyzes your face and they're like, your face is ugly, you can't model anymore. Like, it is what it is. It's part of the job. So
yeah, so that is, it exists. It happens. It's part of the CBA. And so the reason Preller was suspended was because
he was looking up Joey Votto's junk.
That's exactly it. He didn't include any of the information relating to injuries or treatments to players that were called preventative treatments. And basically what this means is he told the training staff and doctors to only put in information that directly related to a player when they were injured and already on the DL. So that information is already publicly available when
right.
You put a player on the disabled list.
I wonder, it must be him being as technical as he can, right, with what they agreed on. Like, he probably is like, oh, well, maybe I don't have to put preventative. You think it was some crap like that?
I'm sure that that's probably the way he's trying to spin it, but it really, you know, he's been in other organizations. He was the assistant GM. If you see all of the other teams that you're
right. You don't get suspended for 30 days as a GM if you didn't violate something that's objectively understood by every other team.
It's not something that just slipped through the cracks.
Right.
And, you know, where this directly relates is San Diego traded Colin Ray, a starting pitcher, to the Marlins on July 29th, a couple of days before the trade deadline. Now, Colin Ray was receiving preventative treatments for his elbow prior to being traded. Now, this information was not included in that database. Ray gets traded to Miami and makes a start on July 30th, the day after the trade, and he was pulled from the start because of elbow soreness.
Oh, my God.
Now, San Diego negotiated a deal to get Colin Ray back. I don't know if they would have been forced to do that deal, but that in and of itself kind of just shows, like, you
right.
know, San Diego knew that they did something wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, there's a couple of bigger issues this speaks to. One, you know, AJ Preller, it's his second time being suspended. We'll get a little bit more into what happened there. But the more pervasive issue to me is kind of like, can you really have this guy still as the general manager of an organization? Because the other 29 GMs are not going to be able to trust him and are not going to want to deal with him.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that part of it. I just thought it's like, yeah, it's just more making San Diego look like a joke from the guy who tried to get good overnight, like we said. Like, I'm sure he knows 8 trillion times more than me, and he's smarter than me, but this is such a stupid... It's so unnecessary. Like, for it's again... I guess it fits in with the same guy that, like, this is a shortcut type of thing, and it comes from the same ilk of trying to get good overnight is, like, trying to get over on a trade, where, like, if you really think about the long run, like you said, GMs aren't going to do business with you, and it's just hurting you in the long run. So maybe he's only worried about, like, getting as much money as he can out of ownership out of San Diego and doesn't really care. Who the hell knows? I mean, that's just even more ridiculousness. But Mr. San Diego Padre owner, or miss, you know, Tom and I would make great GMs. We would stop bashing you. You know, you're our favorite team, so we're here.
Yeah, your franchise value will go up because, you know, with us bashing you, it's really killing the long-term value of your organization. So in order to put a stop to that, just bring us on board.
That's a great point. Not only will you gain not being bashed by us, also all like of our listeners, which is maybe 11 to 100, will double your fan base.
Overnight.
That's so,
the quick results you're looking for.
Wait, what was he suspended to the first time before we move on?
So prior to being the GM of the San Diego Padres, Preller was the
gay
head of
porn organizer.
He was the head of the international scouting department for the Texas Rangers. And there's a rule that when a player is suspended by Major League Baseball, you can't be negotiating with them. And this comes up a lot in Latin America because a lot of times you have players falsifying birth certificates and lying about their age. And so they receive a suspension when that's found out. So AJ Preller was apparently found to have been negotiating with an agent and a player that was currently suspended for lying about his age.
Huh.
So, you know, again, it's... if you take everything technically by the word, he can probably say, oh, well, I wasn't negotiating a contract. Like, but, you know, we all know what it is. Organizations try to push the envelope, and it looks really bad when you're doing something like this where really the benefit to me, when you look at these deals, like...
Yeah, what is one of these... No one of these deals is going to win you a championship. Like, all of these are going to do way more harm in the long run than help, like...
Right.
Unless, no, even if you did get away with it, if and when the inevitable Colin Ray elbow stuff comes, they're going to be like, what the hell did you guys know about this? And then they'll figure out that they were dishonest about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, the big thing to me, I hadn't thought about the whole trust factor with the other GMs until a couple of minutes before we were sitting down, but it's huge. If I were the owner of the Padres, I would have to fire Preller. I think it's almost embarrassing that they're even considering keeping him around.
Yeah, I mean, if he had done a good job, I would, like, maybe argue otherwise, but he also sucks, so whatever. So the other thing that we wanted to look at today that we thought would be fun to talk about was just, like, going back to, like, before the trade deadline, we looked at like where teams were really bad at out of certain positions. Like the Indians at catcher were horrible, and the Yankees and Rangers at DH,
Astros at center field.
Yeah, Astros at center field, and so I just want to talk about a couple of the trades that teams didn't or did make and how they've worked out. Like, and just like before we get into this year, yet again, going through these numbers and about to talk about the topic of like relief in trades you didn't or did make, I am so grateful to the baseball gods that the Mets didn't get Carlos Gomez when Wilmer Flores was crying that day, thinking it was his last day as a Met.
Yeah.
Like, thank God. Imagine if we had Carlos go. Oh my God.
Yeah, I think the Mets would not have made the World Series last year.
Yoenis is,
hell
not. No, not without Yoenis.
And they would certainly not be in contention this year either.
Hell no.
That's a franchise saving move.
And little do you know at the time, because I was bummed. I was like, oh, I guess I have to trust that it's good And then we got Yoenis, who I'd rather have in the first place, and then he killed it. And he's so clutch this year, man, still. All his hits are, like, all his big hits are timed well. So anyway, like, it wasn't until last year, by the way, with Yoenis, that I bought the whole idea of, like, renting a player. Like, like I never thought it I couldn't imagine scenarios where it's really worth it, right? Like, I saw CC Sabathia, but then I saw the Brewers losing the first round or whatever.
Yeah, and giving up Michael Brantley.
Right. There's so many. Right, exactly. It's like he did as good as a human can do, and it still wasn't worth it, really. But then Yoenis Cespedes, even though Michael Fulmer I would love to have back, like, it shows you how powerful this stuff can be. So, I don't know, like the Indians was the number one thing. We thought they should get a catcher if they could. But we did also say at the time that they were so ahead in the standings that maybe you don't make a move because you're a young team. And I think that almost they've gotten a little bit of better production naturally out of catcher. Like, I think they did the right thing by not doing anything. What do you think?
Well, if you remember, the deal was basically done and Lucroy exercised his no trade option. So the Indians were going to pull the trigger on the deal. With Lucroy in particular, he was the, if you remember, he was the one catcher that was really above and beyond anyone else on the market. And the teams that were in the mix for him, I believe, were the Rangers, the Mets, and the Indians. And the Indians had that deal in place. Lucroy exercised his no-trade clause. But yeah, I think it worked out well for the Indians to not make that deal, because I don't think that they would have been able to sign him when he becomes a free agent. And they were so far ahead in the standings. They're still seven ahead.
They still are.
In the division, so they're going to make the playoffs.
And
so
they're a cheap franchise enough that they need to have a – they're not like the Yankees or even the Rangers or somebody who can retool a little more quickly, right? Like, they need to have a plan, like a small market team, where they need to stay good for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Do you think the Rangers are happy they did it?
I think the Rangers are happy they made that
trade. I guess it'll really... They knew they were going to make the playoffs at that point anyway, really, the Rangers, because they were the best team in baseball. This is really, in large part, about the postseason and stuff and, like, really going for it, so...
Well, if you remember, the Astros, before the trade deadline, were hot as any team in baseball after a really rough start, so I think the Astros were kind of pulling close, but here's where we get into...
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, they were a couple games out.
We get into the discussion of a player's value to different teams and in different scenarios. So, for example, the Indians are a small market club. They had a pretty deep farm system, then made the trade for Miller.
Which you raped them on.
But you look at the Rangers, they had one of the best farm systems and deepest in the league. And, catcher, they had more assets to be able to upgrade that position that was so poor. They had assets at the major league level, high in the farm. They just had, to them, giving up, even if it was considered, multiple or overpaying with top prospects, It didn't mean as much to them just because they have so deep of a farm system.
Yeah, it's a good point. I definitely like it better for them in hindsight than like if the Indians had done it. I agree. Like they, that's the theory of trades, is that you're supposed to be giving up a surplus for a need, and the other team is giving up some surplus for a need or something, right? It's like
exactly.
They're supposed to be win-wins on paper. So the Mets, Jay Bruce, last year he was actually talked about a lot. People thought the Mets were going to get Jay Bruce the day of the deadline. And then it ended up being like, it was like Carlos Gomez the day before the deadline, then Jay Bruce. Then it was like, no, Yoenis at the last minute. Again, thank God. But now this year we get Jay Bruce. He was killing it, like led the league in RBIs or something. I know that's a stupid guy stat, but he's doing well, and now since he's come to the Mets, he's hitting like 181, man.
Yeah, it's been a terrible deal for the Mets.
And this was like, oh, there's no spot for him. He's just such a good bat. They'll fit him in.
Yeah, the deal, if you remember too, Jay Bruce was raking before the deadline, and his value just it literally his value was absolutely maximized.
Yeah,
right,
it was probably
the
worst single time ever.
And if you look at a couple of things, one, he was playing in a hitter's ballpark. Now right field is an extra 50 feet. The ball doesn't carry as well at Citi Field as it does in Cincy. That's not enough to even come close to scratching the surface of the issue here. But one of the big things that's alarming about Jay Bruce, and I think he kind of was always this way, but he is an all-or-nothing player. And I remember a game last weekend where it was less than two outs, a runner on third base, and he couldn't even make contact.
Yeah, his approach sucks. Like, I totally agree.
And they lost in that game 1-0.
Yeah, man. I don't like – he's like how – you feel about Chris Davis or I don't know, not to that extreme, but yeah, I don't like his approach. He's so tilted right now too. You could see it. So maybe he'll get it together.
And
I don't know.
The other thing is when you look at the Mets organization, Michael Conforto kind of to me just seems like a younger version of Jay Bruce.
Right. It's like, why not keep playing
hitter.
Him? Yeah. Well, I guess at the time of the trade deadline, we thought that maybe he, well, one, Granderson looked worse, right? Granderson's, like, rebounded to make this a good season recently when they moved him to cleanup or whatever. And two, like, Conforto was slumping a lot, almost got sent back down for a bit. And then also, it's still, even though he may be horrible in value with how he's been playing, but that Yoenis is definitely walking, and the Mets definitely, I think, are not going to re-sign him. So, you know, you have Jay Bruce for another year, whatever. I mean, he's a serviceable player. The thing that saved the Mets is that they've done well enough, like getting James Loney and Rene Rivera has come up and played well, and TJ Rivera or whatever has played well, and
yeah,
all the, and what the hell is the guy who Lugo and all these random no names have just come up and done well.
What's the name of that pitcher that starts with a G? His last name?
Robert Gesselman. Oh yeah, that's it. And Seth Lugo is
real big
is,
Mets fan right here.
Yeah, whatever. Seth Lugo is killing it. Yeah, all these random guys. So the Mets have gotten lucky, and the Giants kind of fell apart, and the Marlins fell out of the race. Whatever, stuff's falling into place.
Can I ask you a serious question though? Are you concerned since you've moved out of Queens? Now everybody's going to know you're really a Mets poser.
Why? Oh, because I'm not.
Back,
I don't live
yeah.
in Queens.
Aren't you afraid of the backlash from that move?
Well, I've been getting a lot of heat on Twitter, and I've had to block numerous people for calling me a fake fan. And to those people, I would say, eat a
my
dick.
Shorts.
Eat my shorts. Like, leave me alone, Dad.
Okay.
You know. So, what's the other frickin' trade? The Billy Butler is a butterbean, and the Yankees definitely don't need another DH. What the hell?
Yeah, well, that actually...
This is totally just a curveball. This is not what we plan on talking
about.
That
deal actually makes sense for the Yankees because...
Are you sure you're not being influenced that he had a game-tying hit the other night or something?
No, it makes a lot of sense because the Yankees, as you've seen the lineup, you saw it from the wild card game last year when they couldn't hit Dallas Keuchel. The Yankees have had their issues hitting left-handed pitchers, and Billy Butler, if there's one thing he could do, was hit left-handed pitching. So it actually made sense for them. You know, there's the rosters were expanded, so it's not like he was really, you know, costing them anything in the way of a roster spot.
There was this guy who could hit lefties well who was a DH. I forget his name. I think you guys were like, you owed him a lot of money and you made him retire. Alex Rodriguez, it was the guy. That's who it is.
I've never heard of
him. He hit lefties pretty well. Well, he's an unknown player, but he's a right-handed like power bat. And some say he could have hit the most home runs of all time if he had the chance. But maybe he's a distraction. So it seems silly to have Billy Butler for that purpose instead of A-Rod, even though A-Rod sucked. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess you thought you could be in it. You know,
they were in it.
I know. I'm looking at it from the perspective of like coming off this 4-game sweep and you guys being pretty much out of it. That I'm like, you might as well have A-Rod, but that's not like we've debated. You're trying to win games, so I mean,
you think about the Yankees like Friday night. If Betances doesn't have that total meltdown, if they win that game, they're one game back of the wild card,
right?
One game back in the division. Then they just get absolutely just smashed by Hanley Ramirez this weekend, and the Yankees are now officially totally out of it. But they really had nothing to lose by signing Billy Butler.
Yeah. No, I understand. I just, I feel bad for the little guy, A-Rod. He's sitting at home collecting unemployment. So anyway.
It's a good unemployment program.
Yeah, dude. Oh, my God. It's great. You get $30 million a year, if you made $30 million a year.
Well,
so,
don't forget, he's still a special advisor.
Oh, God. So he can't get unemployment.
And the royalties from his retirement.
They really should fix that, the New York State government. I know, how can you not collect unemployment if you still happen to have a job, but it's just a figurehead title with the Yankees? There should be a clause for people like A-Rod who are making $30 million a year and be forced to retire, but they still work as a consultant. There's no reason he shouldn't get an extra $400 a week of my tax dollars.
Yeah, and think about his mental health, too. This could affect him in a negative way.
Yeah, this is the type of thing that breeds all these mass shootings. Like, you know, it's like people not caring about mental health of A-Rod's. Anyway, so what's some other one? What am I forgetting?
Well, there was the whole – before the Dodgers traded for Rich Hill and Josh Reddick, there was a lot of speculation that – Dodgers were going to pull the trigger on a move to bring Chris Archer. Because if you remember last year, the Dodgers were the absolute favorites to land Cole Hamels from the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up passing on that deal. Obviously, they regret that. Because if you see what Cole Hamels
has
done.
Yeah, he's been amazing.
They lost Zach Greinke as well this offseason. So, yeah, that's an interesting discussion. You know, what if the Dodgers had made a move to get Chris Archer rather than picking up Rich Hill and Josh Reddick? I think that they would have regretted that for sure, because Chris Archer would have cost them a lot more than
the
two short-term rentals.
But you would be buying him at the lowest point. You know, who knows?
Right.
You know what I was just thinking of going back to the Yankees? If you could see in a crystal ball and you could get any value for McCann, if the Indians or somebody be willing to pay for it, wouldn't you love to do that in hindsight? Like get rid of his contract and move McCann with Gary Sanchez playing so well?
I think that the Yankees tried to do that.
Yeah.
There was the whole discussions of sending him to the Braves, and I still think that this offseason McCann is going to be gone. The Yankees are going to eat part of his contract.
Like, yeah. That makes a lot of sense to have some veteran there for all these young dudes who's been there, no? And he could grow a beard again and not look like trailer trash.
Yeah, I think that's the main point is, like, you know, the organizations realize that you want the players looking their best for their baseball card images. So
it's in your long-term best interest as a franchise to have your players not be hideous ghouls.
Reshuffle the deck.
Wow, Chris Archer, 8-18 this year with a 4.05 ERA, 1.23 whip. He'll come back. It's just a bad season.
Yeah, I never really... You know, the media,
we are the media
trade,
now, Tom.
It's
our 11th episode. We're officially the media now. But go on, sorry.
Card. But, yeah, that was in the media, and I think a lot of it was because Chris Archer is a big name. But that deal really never made sense. You know, Tampa still has him for, I think, 4 or 5 years at, like, 30% of his market value.
And I think they're a smart enough franchise to not sell him this low, right? It's like...
Yeah, absolutely.
And with that many... Right. It's like, who knows if you could be good again in a couple years, because 2 years ago they were close to being good again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you know what I wanted to talk to you about? Matt Kemp is that his old trainer, or no, his new GM in the Braves, said he was fat and didn't care about baseball, basically, which is awesome. And then you start reading, and it's like Matt Kemp is a diva. He's a baby. Like, he's selfish, eats donuts. I'm exaggerating a little, but that it is that he's a big time diva.
Yeah, that you're totally right. That's from everything I've heard. He's a bad teammate. I have a little bit of, I guess, sympathy for him because he actually wrote a letter when he got traded to the Braves, and he talked about all of those issues, how, like, once he signed that big contract, he started slacking off. He, like, let it get to his head. I mean, he's obviously about 25, 30 pounds overweight, but he's had a pretty decent season, and I think that was a good trade for the Braves.
Since he's on the Braves, he's hitting .293 with an OPS of .853. I mean, I don't know. I never realized how little he walks. Like, I mean, he had such an amazing season that the year he should have won the MVP, but then Ryan Braun won it, and then Matt Kemp. You could tell how dramatic he was when Ryan Braun got caught. Mm-hmm. He's like, he looked me in the eyes and told me he didn't. So whatever. That was just funny though that you never hear anybody be that blunt as the GM was. Like, well, yeah, he needs to get in shape.
Yeah, and I mean it's kind of awesome to hear that. It's refreshing. Because everybody knew what the
right. It's like Eddie Lacy to like being vague about Sir Pablo Sandoval. It's like, no, you're fat, get in shape.
Yeah, exactly.
The other player I wanted to mention was Brian Dozier. Everybody going bananas about his
home run.
Yeah, and he's a player I thought I didn't like until recently. Honestly, I really had the opinion that he does so much damage against lefties and that he kind of sells out to hit home runs more than I like. But this year he's been so good that you can't say that, and that's not true. He has 59 walks. Like it's not like he's walking 25 times and batting .220 and hitting 30 home runs. He hit .240 the last three seasons and walked 61, 81, 51 times. You know, this year he's hitting .280. I think he's playing as well as advertised. You know, maybe it's the juice, but it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting because from what I've heard from a lot of the ex-players who are analysts, he changed his approach shortly before the All-Star break. He was trying to hit the ball to all fields, and he sort of changed his approach more to pulling the ball, and that's been, you know, largely responsible for this power streak he's been on. To me, it's even more impressive the fact that a lot of these home runs are coming at Target Field, mm-hmm. where the ball just does not fly. It's colder in Minnesota. It's a bigger field. He really doesn't have anything in terms of protection in the lineup. I'm pretty sure Joe Mauer hits behind him. And
I wonder if they knew if he was, because he didn't start the season well. Actually, he was playing worse than he had been the previous 2 years.
Right.
In the first half of this year, so much so that MLB The Show lowered his rating, bro, to a silver from
a
and I know that's a big deal. And I wonder if they would have like traded him, like if he was in the middle of this and it was pre-trade deadline and you're the worst record in baseball or second worst, I'd trade him in 2 seconds.
Yeah, I think that if he had been on this streak, they definitely would have looked to trade him. I'm looking right here, and I think that, you know, as of the end of the season, I think he's going to be close to 4 service years, so he's about 2 years away from free agency. I mean, the Twins don't look like they're anywhere close to being a contender, so you know you're going to probably lose Dozier in 2 years to free agency, trade him away while his value is at its highest. We might see him move in the offseason.
Yeah. That would be smart of them. I mean, he has 2 full years left, it looks like, and he's a good enough fielder. He's like, God, man, I was going to say he's like Daniel Murphy, but Daniel Murphy's a better hitter and a worse fielder.
Yeah, and Dozier has 15 stolen bases this year.
Dude, he does everything. I didn't realize, honestly, I just assumed that he was just, doesn't walk and had a worse approach than he did because I just, like an old man, looked at his average in home runs and deduced that the last 2 years, But I like him.
Yeah, 112 runs scored in 2014. Yeah, he's a solid player, and it's even more so impressive that he's, you know, like we said, playing in Minnesota and playing in probably the worst lineup in baseball.
Ew, Mark Trumbo. Yeah, I don't feel like you're allowed to lead the league in home runs if you're Mark Trumbo. That's not very fair. Like, I feel like Edwin Encarnacion, like the top three guys, Mark Trumbo, Brian Dozier, and Chris Davis with a K at 43, 41, and 40. That's not right. Baseball needs to implement something to fix that because those guys are all scrubs. Even though I just told you how much I love Brian Dozier, I'm changing it now for my new point because that's how I roll. You know, like I'm the Skip Bayless of this stuff.
The thing that's amazing, and I think I sent you this tweet a while back, is the Chris Davis with a K is outperforming the Chris Davis with a C.
Yo, who would have thought, yo, that K, I mean, C come before K in the alphabet. No, I know, it is pretty crazy.
One makes $22 million a year. The other one is making $524,000 this year.
Yo, you were on the I don't like the Chris Davis with the C's contract before anybody. A lot of people, including me, was like, oh, they paid him less than I thought they were gonna have to.
They gotta sign him.
But yeah, you've hated him forever. Not hate is a strong word, but you've accurately, like our problems with Jay Bruce or somebody or Carlos Gomez, have not liked his approach. And it's the same thing. He's batting .223 this year with 38 homers.
201 strikeouts.
That's gross. How many walks? 81. That's not bad, but yeah, still, it's like come on, man.
Yeah.
How worth it are all these home runs if you're not hitting regularly? I'm just saying stuff to say stuff with that last sentence. I'm sorry, guys. I don't like anybody on this home run list except Rougned Odor is like hit 31. That's pretty sweet. And Chris Carter. Ew. What is he hitting? 180?
222.
Ha! That's pretty cool, though. I mean, the Brewers are definitely happy with what they've gotten out of him so far this year.
Yeah. All right.
So, Hanley Ramirez, what are we going to do about him, right? You're a Yankee fan. You got to get revenge. What are you going to do?
What am I going to do, or what is the organization going to do?
Well, I don't know. You guys tried making him look like horrible in left field last year and sending him to first, and you thought that was going to decrease his value, and then you personally, you know, enabled him to have such a good series. How are you going to make up for it? You're going to put him back at shortstop? What are you going to do?
I think I'm just going to send insulting GIFs to him on Twitter.
Yeah, I was going to say we should stick with that strategy because that seems to be working.
Well, I just want to make sure the viewers don't let him in on that early because I think that'll dramatically impact how effective our strategy will be.
Okay, guys, don't pretend. Ignore.
Yeah, don't tell Hanley that we're going to send him.
I used to love him, but I can't love a first baseman who puts up his numbers. Like, I just don't care as much. It's not nearly as juicy, obviously, as when he was a shortstop. But
and as good as he's playing, I think that he's going to be out of Boston this offseason or the next offseason.
Why? For what?
Because you look at their farm system, you need a place for Yoan Moncada to play.
DH.
Travis Shaw was still playing well. I think, you know, Boston really had very low expectations for him. They moved him to first base. You know,
what failures did Pablo
sort of,
and him sign contracts?
They're lucky that they got this production out of him, and I think that Dave Dombrowski's going to probably try and get some value for him this offseason while they still can.
Who do you think would buy him?
Get rid of the contract. I don't know.
The only team that would. Yeah, well, they have Will Myers, and then they try both of them in left and right field, and then, like, move. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good call. The Padres will, like, start him at shortstop and not worry about defense. Will Myers, actually, though, is a player who's, obviously, we've talked about this, but almost every time any player moves to first, it's like, oh, I don't like them as much now, right? It's like every day Buster Posey plays first, I'm, like, so unexcited. I get aggravated. It's like, oh, you're so much less cool to me now. But Will Myers has been so good defensively that, like, he's been one of the few, like, cool examples of that, I guess. I don't know.
It was a bizarre situation that they sent him there anyway. It's interesting because we kind of got into this a little bit the last episode, but Will Myers is not the prototypical first baseman. You know, he's very athletic. He played center field in Tampa Bay. And I think a lot of these positional roles are starting to sort of change in the way that they're you know, forecasting players that are being scouted based specifically on body types. You look at second basemen, and for a very long time, second basemen were just shortstops, good defensive shortstops that didn't have a spot.
And, yeah, right. Little guys who are a little bit worse defensively, right?
Right, and now it's, you know, you have legitimate power hitters at second base.
Yeah.
The league is changing because of the shifting as well.
Right, yeah, you made that point, that second base, like, yeah, that you can afford to have worse defensive second basemen like Daniel Murphy when you're shifting that much, right? It's like he's not required to make as many plays alone, or they're easier plays or something.
Exactly. And when you're shifting and moving players around like that, you can always have your worst defender in the spot where they're least likely to hit the
ball. Right. And you could get away with it. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I just look forward to, we're going to wrap up in a minute, but you know, I look forward to some kind of like redemption where Daniel Murphy, like, makes the game-losing error against the Mets when the Nationals play them in the NLDS, because I can't live with the fact that they let him go and he's better than Bryce Harper.
The thing that's so amazing, and it's not mentioned enough, is the fact that the Nationals weren't even going to sign Daniel Murphy.
It's crazy.
Had that trade in place for Brandon Phillips of the Reds, and he exercised his no-trade clause to stay in Cincinnati for, you know, whatever reason. Like, his kids go to school there.
Some woman definitely
settled.
Blackmailed him. Like his mistress blackmailed him. Like, yo,
you can't stay leave Cincy.
You can't leave me. You leave me. I'm releasing these pictures. And he's like, all right.
All right, I guess I'm staying with
I
Joey
guess I'm
Votto.
I'm staying in Cincinnati. I'll stay on a non-contender.
Or he has a crush on Joey Votto.
I have a crush on Joey Votto. Even though he's like the reverse selfish of Carlos Gomez. Like, Carlos Gomez sells out to hit home runs. Joey Votto sells out to not drive and runs, just to walk. And he got there. His numbers got there again. And you know, what's the guy's name? It was AJ Preller. You know, he's privy to the information about Joey Votto's junk. Honestly, I would take 30 days off from work to know about that. That's priceless. So I don't really know what I'm saying, but Brandon Phillips maybe just
had inside information that wasn't included in the database.
Well, nice. Thanks for saving me.
You got it.
So that's it. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you guys for listening. Follow us on Twitter.
You leave a review, even if you don't like it. It's on, even if it's a bad review, it's on your phone already. Any review,
yeah,
helps.
If you have an iOS device from Apple, click on the podcast app.
It's already on your phone.
It's pink. You can't delete it. Click the search button. Enter Cap Figure Podcast. Subscribe and leave a review. We love you all. Thank you. Goodbye. Never doubt that you're the one.